I think that I was intrigued by the time period when the Illinois legislature and governor's office was pretty deep into cutting deals for public policy. And it was a time when those deals could be cut because of the way the legislature was constructed. And I'm sure you're familiar with cumulative voting and the selection of members of the legislature. And even though a single party had control of the House or the Senate, the votes, the number, were very close, and so just a few trades of votes could cut some deals that didn't depend strictly on partisan control of the houses of chambers of the legislature. And some members of the legislature were more adept at cutting deals and making deals than others. And what I have discovered in writing several books about Illinois politics is that in the time period of the after World War II in the 1940s, 50s, and 1960s, the dominant deal makers and politicians were from Southern Illinois.
Let's talk about these three individuals and what they were able to accomplish.
They were able to work with Chicago and with the Democrats, but the Democrats and Republicans downstate tended to have enough votes to get pretty much what they wanted if they could cut some deals. And it turned out, as I felt, that the principal dealers during that time period were Paul Powell, Clyde Choate from Southern Illinois, from deep Southern Illinois, and John Stell, who wasn't a member of the legislature, but Stell was a downstater with lots of political clout, particularly with the veterans of World War I and World War II, who still populated and were very active politically in Illinois. And Stell also had a lot of personal money, and he was able to invest in different Republicans and Democrats. He was a Democrat, but he crossed the line a lot. And he worked with Powell and with Choate on things like racetrack legislation and other subjects, common school taxes and all. And they formed a coalition that reached out into all areas, particularly of downstate Illinois. And because Powell was a Speaker of the House and also a minority leader much of the time that he was in the legislature, he simply was able to do pretty much what he wanted in terms of cutting deals. Choate became his understudy and worked with him. He was the vote counter, I think, in the legislature. And then when Powell moved on to the Secretary of State's job, Choate took over the leadership of those coalitions that worked on subjects like the income tax that was passed in 1969, and Choate was very active in getting some changes in that proposal. So Choate then continued to work the coalitions successfully until he retired in 1977.
It really was a different era in government. We think today of all this backroom dealing and think of it in a negative way. It was not looked at the same way back in those days.
There was simply a lot of crossing of the partisan lines in order to get social legislation. Higher education was a big subject. It really, without the deal making, SIU would never have grown as it did in that time period. And all higher education schools, institutions, benefited from the deal making with the in the legislature and with the governor at that time. The various governors, they all recognized that they could work various coalitions and get their subjects passed as well. It was a different time, and it was a different political picture in Illinois. So different that people today who are schooled in Illinois politics have a hard time understanding how that could have happened.
A lot of people today, they look at the backroom deals and, you know, they give something for a vote, and they view that, I guess, tied in as corruption in Illinois government. And in some cases, certainly it has been used that way. And even back in this day, there was corruption that took place. But it was also a necessity to do the work that way to get things done, wasn't it?
Well, pretty much so. I think, as one person suggested about these three individuals, none of them were choir boys, and I think they all pushed the envelope a lot on ethics. They lined their pockets with money based on legislation that was passed, particularly with racetrack ownership. There was no question that it was, of course, it was a time before disclosure of campaign contributions and personal wealth, and so money moved around a lot. Now, you can call that corruption, and I suppose to a certain extent it was. But on the other hand, that's the way votes were gathered in that time period, a lot.
You also used the term ethical flexibility. I thought that was an interesting term to try to come up with there. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that nobody was particularly alarmed at the proclivities of payoffs, of substantial help for campaigns to get votes, campaign money. Nobody got particularly alarmed about that. Oh, there were some individual legislators. Paul Simon was a good example, who tried to work to open up disclosure and reveal some of the things that were going on. But they were not successful until, sort of the 60s and 70s is when the disclosures became more evident. And people simply accepted that was the way of doing business. Now, there were always a few people who resisted that. But by and large, if you wanted to be successful in that time period, particularly in the legislature, if you wanted to have your bills passed, if you wanted to get good assignments on committees, then you played ball, and you played ball with Paul Powell and his friends, his pals, because they could cut the deals, and that simply was. We can look at that, I think, in hindsight, and we can say, gee, that was probably not healthy in some respects. And I think I would agree with that certainly we hope that disclosures in laws today will minimize that kind of corrupt activity. But that was the way it was, and that was the way that business was done then. And what you know is, no matter what era you're working in, it depends on what you can get done. What results can you get, and how can you get them?
We're talking with Bob Hartley. He's a former journalist and the author of The Dealmakers of Downstate Illinois, Paul Powell, Clyde Schoute, and John Stell. Well, that area, and I grew up in southern Illinois where these gentlemen are from, and even though they've been out of power now for more than a generation, they're still pretty highly thought of in that area despite this ethical flexibility that you talked about. And I guess that goes back to getting those things done, bringing back things to the districts.
Yes, that was uppermost in their minds, these three and their cohorts in Southern Illinois, downstate, was to get some local programs through, get some bridges built, and some open up some parks, and of course SIU was a big economic item in their minds. Don John Stell went to college, but Clyde Schoed, Paul Powell, they never darkened the door of a college in their time, but they were big supporters of the university, primarily from an economic development standpoint. And so part of the working of the legislature was to get votes, to get people work in the coalitions that cut the deals. You had to give them something for their local districts. And there was a regional political emphasis on helping Southern Illinois, which was always a little bit on the downside of the economic list, helping Southern Illinois, particularly as Chicago and the suburbs grew. A lot of the deal making was to help the economic development in that area. People remember that, and they remember it for generations. It's amazing, really, how the works of Schoed and Powell could long last almost any other people down there, because they were very attentive to local projects and patronage, and so state jobs, and everybody was willing to cut a deal for some state jobs, and that helped the area as well. Now, we know now in the lineup of politics in the legislature and state that Southern Illinois is on the weak end of receiving a lot of things in state government. And much of the effort and all goes to the suburbs and to Chicago, and the Southern Illinois downstate political effort is hurting. And I think the difference is that there's been a change in the laws and a change in the voting patterns of people in the state.
Do you think when you look at government today, and I'm not going to say it's less corrupt or more corrupt or anything like that, we don't really know until investigations come out, things like that, but when you see the inability at times of getting things done, is that where a deal maker from the past, like a Paul Powell or like a Clyde Schoed, they could be more than helpful in getting things accomplished in this type of climate?
Well, of course, I think that it's fairly easy for someone like me to say, gee, look at how things got done, and then look how we can't get things done now. As I said earlier, the times were immeasurably different. What is missing, and I think that this is the part that. That hurts the most. What's missing are those coalitions that cut across partisan lines, and the partisanship, I think, in the state of Illinois at this time, and it has been so for a number of years, simply doesn't put much of a premium on working together and cutting across those lines to get things done. So I think that if there's a major difference, there's always a difference in personalities, of course, but in a major difference, there needs to be an incentive for getting things done. If you look at the two governors that we can think of most recently, beyond the ones who are in jail, to Jim Thompson and to Jim Edgar, they were, as Republicans, they're almost all the time that they served, the legislature was controlled by Democrats. But if you go back and look at what got done and the programs that got cut and that were done, the deals that were done, my goodness, Jim Thompson was a great deal maker. They were able to cut across those lines. They were able to do enough work with the Democrats to get things that both the Democrats and the Republicans wanted. It really was as close to those earlier days as anyone has gotten in recent times. And part of that was that the Republican governors were willing to deal with the likes of Mike Madigan, the Speaker of the House, who was in control of the House in those days. And they knew that he wanted things, and he knew that they wanted things, and that's when things get done.
Was there anything else you wanted to mention or point out that maybe people misunderstood about these fellows or things you'd like to get across to them?
I think what is important is for us to know that there was a time, call it what you want, there was a time when some things got done. And if you look at some of the institutions that exist even today, you can trace them back to their growth and development to those days in the 50s and 60s, and even in the 70s when a lot of things got done. And I don't mean just racetracks. I'm talking about social programs as well. And the state income tax was a major factor in all of that. So in those time periods, even though they changed somewhat as they moved along, they still were able to work to get things done and to get them done to make the whole state happy and feel good about it. And I think that if you understand that and don't try to get too carried away with the corruption subject or the ethical subject, if you look at that and then you look at what's happening now and has happened for some time, then you understand how different it is. It doesn't mean that it's going to change or in change for the better, but it's sometimes better to have that that perspective when you're looking at your state.